This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Cambie podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. As counties tallied primary ballots, one fact became evident. The next Oregon governor will be a woman with legislative experience. Everything else about the race is still up in the air. Most years, it's a safe assumption that Democrats will hold onto the governor's office, as they have since 1986. Registered Democrats far outnumber Republicans, who have only won one statewide race since 2000. But a majority of Oregonians polled this year say the state is on the wrong track, which could spell trouble for former House Speaker Tina Kotek, the Democratic nominee. And it's too early to tell whether Betsy Johnson, a former Democratic state senator now running a non-affiliated campaign, will siphon more votes from Kotek or the Republican nominee, former House Minority Leader Christine Drazen, or whether she can win herself. A poll of 516 voters released Wednesday by Salem-based Nelson Research shows Drazen leading in a competitive race with about 29.5% support, 27.5% for Kotek, and 19.4% for Johnson. Nearly a quarter of voters were undecided when asked between May 25th and May 27th. The survey sample included a slightly higher share of Republican voters and a lower share of Democratic voters than have participated in recent midterm elections, and its margin of error was 4.3%. Oregonians have gotten used to relatively low-key summers between the end of the primary and the general election in the fall, but Johnson's presence in the race will likely change that. Johnson must gather about 24,000 signatures from Oregon voters by August 30th to make it on the ballot, and her opponents won't cede the summer to her. She's got a ton of money to spend, and I think there's going to be a real strong need for Democrats and Republicans to try to define her before she gets to define herself, pollster John Horvick with DHM Research said. I would guess that there's going to be more activity, advertising, and all that sort of stuff happening early on than typical. The race is likely to become the most expensive in Oregon history. Johnson had raised $8.6 million, Drazen almost $2.7 million, and Kotek $2.5 million by the end of May. With their primaries over, Kotek and Drazen will start taking in more money and gathering endorsements from labor unions, corporate PACs, activist organizations, and party leaders that stayed neutral during the primary. It will have to be the most expensive campaign for governor in Oregon's history, said Rebecca Tweed, a Republican political consultant. If each candidate could raise it, we could easily see upwards of $20 million each spent on their campaigns. In contrast, Governor Kate Brown and Republican nominee Newt Bueller raised a combined $36 million in 2018, the most expensive race to date. Kotek easily won her primary, despite Reid and other candidates describing her as an out-of-touch and too progressive. Reid has since endorsed her. Drazen, meanwhile, was the establishment choice for governor, besting other candidates who leaned into culture war issues like school curricula, abortion, and false claims of election fraud. Paul Gronke, a political science professor at Reed College, said Drazen was smart to keep her distance from those issues. I think it was just smart to stay away from some of those divisive issues, he said. It may not have helped her with some of the hardcore base, but you just can't win in Oregon with that hardcore base. Gronke said the smart money would be on Kotek because Oregon still leans liberal or liberal libertarian, even if national trends don't look good for Democrats this year. He noted that Oregon's recent gubernatorial races have been relatively competitive and said Drazen probably would do better in a head-to-head matchup with Kotek than in a three-way primary. I would think in a two-party race that Drazen has the potential to be a lot more competitive, he said. It's hard for me to see how Johnson is not going to hurt Drazen on balance more than Kotek because people who want to vote against the ruling party or the dominant party have two choices. Senator Bill Kenemer, Republican from Oregon City, decreed a party line vote by the Oregon Legislature's Emergency Board last week that approved $333 million in new bonding debt to pay for Interstate 205 improvements. The plan relies heavily on paying for the bonds with freeway tolls, which over 70% of Oregonians oppose. Kenemer expressed concern that the vote ignored the reality that the cost of commuting to work, school, and household errands are breaking family budgets. I have consistently opposed tolling because it targets my constituents around Interstate 205, Kenemer said in a statement. A majority of Clackamas residents have to drive out of the county for work and to access health care. To ask them to shoulder the burden of this plan's cost is patently unfair. He went on to call freeway tolls a regressive tax on poor and working members of our communities. Kenemer, who does not serve on the E-Board, said he would have voted against bond funding backed by freeway toll revenues. Kenemer also expressed concern that the legislature and ODOT have failed to have meaningful conversations about other options to build freeway infrastructure and looking to other funding sources besides the unpopular tolling plan. It's shocking that we would have this vote in the summer when we're not in session and when the public and the media were generally unaware that such a huge budget expenditure would pass without a full vote of the legislature, Kenemer said. We should not be charging ahead to raise taxes on working class Oregonians who drive at a time when gas prices are at a record high with no signs of coming down anytime soon. To approve more bonded debt while interest rates are skyrocketing and a recession is looming, it's simply irresponsible governance. Kenemer said he will continue to support voters having the opportunity to vote on freeway tolls. U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat, has also publicly stated that freeway tolls are unfair to working Oregonians. We need to have transportation infrastructure that works, but our solutions must be fair and affordable, Kenemer said. We can and must do better. Canby School District has been busy handing out Canby Area Recognition of Excellence Awards recently, with the April Award going to Eccles third grade teacher Jackie Fitch, May's to Baker Prairie Band teacher Jordan Paulus, and June's to retiring Canby High CTE teacher Todd Roberts. The care committee surprised Fitch in the Eccles cafeteria during third grade lunch. Students cheered while a few held up a large banner that said, "Congrats, Mrs. Fitch." Fitch, who is a National Board Certified Teacher, is known for her dedication to her students even after they leave her classroom. Jackie has stated numerous times that once a child is in her class, they are her students forever, said the nomination from a community member. Fitch was also nominated for teaching to the whole student, acknowledging both their academic and emotional needs. The following month, the care committee visited Baker Prairie's band classroom to honor Paulus, who was nominated for his supportive and positive approach to teaching and for growing the band program. Like other teachers during the pandemic, Paulus taught his students over Zoom. Baker Prairie Principal Jennifer Turner noted that even so, band students have grown as musicians. "They sound great," she said of the band as she turned to Paulus and told him, "You are so deserving of this." The band class then proceeded to play an impromptu song for the care committee. Before May's end, in an effort to celebrate one last recipient ahead of summer break, the care committee ventured to Cambie High School, where they surprised Roberts with the June Award. Roberts was honored for leading the CTE department, coordinating grants and budgets, helping put together the makerspace, and advocating for kids. As he prepares to retire after the school year, he said the staff and students have made his journey in education a fun ride. Of the CARE Award, Superintendent Dr. Downs said to Roberts, "It's a time to stop and say thank you and to recognize your hard work. We are incredibly proud and thank you for everything you do for us." Canby Kiwanis established the CARE Award to provide opportunities to recognize individual teachers, counselors, coaches, and other school staff who make a difference in the lives of others and in our community. The prospective recipients must be nominated, and the honoree, or sometimes honorees, are then decided by a CARE committee made up of members from Kiwanis and the community. Cougar Country Hometown Sports Coverage is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, they say. For Jeff and JJ Stolzig, a father and son pair of high school baseball coaches, the apple has fallen in the exact same place as the two make their state finals debuts this week at Volcano Stadium in Kaiser. Jeff Stolzig headed the first-seeded Warriors of Lebanon High School as they fell to their Mid-Willamette Conference foes Crescent Valley in the 5A state final Saturday, while his son, JJ Stolzig, will make his championship debut for the underdog Cambie Cougars as they do battle with fellow Three Rivers League opponent West Lynn, ranked fourth in the state, in the 6A championship at 6 p.m. on Tuesday. "For JJ to make it to the championship, very special," Jeff told Now Hear This Canby. "For us to make it to the championship, very special. For both of us to make it in the same year, I just feel appreciation and gratitude beyond explanation." Jeff Stolzig is a legend in his home community, where he graduated from Lebanon High School in 1977 and returned 13 years later to begin a teaching and coaching career that has now spanned more than three decades. In 32 years, he has coached his beloved Warriors to just shy of 400 wins, with a career record of 397 to 337 for a winning percentage of 541. He's received numerous honors and awards, including being named the Section 8 Coach of the Year by the NFHS in 2020. Asked what led him to coaching, Jeff said that this was a pretty easy question to answer. "I believe that I was called by God to do this as my ministry for him," he told The Current. "I didn't start coaching until my mid-20s. It was then that the Lord showed me that I could combine my love for this game with my love for teaching young people. Coaches and participation in athletics had shaped my early years, and I believe that I was called to be that influence on the lives of other young men. Coaching at Lebanon has been an honor. To be able to give back to a community that helped raise me, my wife Lori, and JJ and Lindsay just seemed like the right thing." JJ Stolzig was also a Lebanon High grad, where his coach, of course, was a very familiar face. "Growing up, I had a lot of fun playing with him," JJ told The Current. "We never had any of the father-son battles. I always called him Dad, you know? I didn't call him Coach." He went on to play catcher at Linfield College, where he batted 31-3 in four seasons with the Wildcats, including a blistering 391 in 2004, and was a first-team all-conference selection his junior and senior seasons. He would spend 7 years working with the baseball and football programs at McKay High School in Salem, including the last 2 years as head varsity baseball coach. His father had a major influence on him and his career choices, he said. "He's still my best friend," he said. "We've always had a special relationship. I learned a lot from him, and it definitely played a huge role in my decision to go into teaching and coaching. But he longed to land a job at another one high school town like Lebanon, and that dream became a reality in 2012 when he took the helm of the Canby Cougar baseball program, which only had had previous state finals appearance to its name, a loss in the Class A to 2 championship in 1960. After an up-and-down regular season, the 14th-seeded Cougs have caught lightning in a bottle in these playoffs with a magical Cinderella run that has included three straight road victories over higher-ranked opponents in number 3, South Medford, number 6, Mountainside, and number 7, Clackamas. Before this year, JJ had coached in only a handful of playoff games during his 10 years at Canby and had never won a single one. Now he has 4 under his belt and is 1 away from helping bring Canby its first ever state title in baseball. I am extremely proud of JJ and his squad for having a great season, Jeff said. Great playoff run, and I'm sure they are going to represent Canby very well in the final game. Making it this far is icing on the cake, as far as I'm concerned. I have been proud of JJ and his crew for battling and competing, not only on the field, but battling and competing with the adversity and trials that this life has thrown at them this season. The father and son duo were originally scheduled to make their finals debuts on the same day, Saturday, but Canby's game was rescheduled due to the rain. When the Cougs do take the field under the leadership of Coach JJ Stolzig, he'll have at least a couple of lifelong fans in the stands. I will certainly be there to watch the game with Lori and the rest of my family and my coaching staff, Jeff said. I am so happy for JJ and his program and the success that they have had this season. They do things the right way. It is not by luck or mere circumstances that they are in this position. They are seeing the results of hard work and doing things the right way.
Hey, Frankie, I've loved working on this show with you and all, but I think it's time I go all in on becoming a full-time gamer.
Oh, yeah? That's great, but aren't you always talking about getting owned by, like, 11-year-olds in Warzone and stuff
no,
like that?
No. That was because my upload speeds, remember? Mm. Whenever I had to drop on someone, I would get destroyed because of the internet lag.
Right. Internet lag.
Anyway, that all changed when I switched to DirectLink. My upload speeds are way faster now, and my online rank has improved a ton. Bro, I'm gonna be Twitch famous.
I'm glad to hear it. And you know, just in case, if the whole professional gamer thing doesn't work out, it will help you with uploading files for the show.
Not a chance, my man! And hey, when I become famous and bring in the big bucks from that sweet, sweet Twitch contract, you'll be the first to hear, I told you so. I've got the skills, and now I've got the reliable internet. It's just a matter of time.
I'm rooting for you, buddy. Hey, before all that, how about you remind our listeners how they can get the best and fastest upload speeds in Canby?
Just go to directlink.coop/internet or call them at 503-266-8111, then pick the plan that's right for you. Every speed, not just their top tiers, come with unlimited data and upload speeds up to 10 times faster than other providers. Give them a call, and just like my Twitch career, you won't be disappointed.
Oh my gosh.
I'm Roz Mason, running for Oregon Senate District 26. I am committed to funding and supporting our police. I'm a licensed armed security officer in the state of Oregon and an active member of a police chaplain association. In the Mount Hood District, we know our communities require safety provided by the police. Law enforcement officers respond to many types of calls. Across the nation, police departments are adding cutting-edge programs that diversify 911 response, sending specially trained teams to mental health or addiction crises when needed. Security is an essential function of our government. Send me to Salem, and I will work to ensure our communities benefit from the most effective safety responses, which also keep our law enforcement officers safer. Paid for by Mason for Oregon 21968.
All right. Well, we are here in the studio with Shauna and Jamie of the Oregon. I said Oregon. Look at me. I don't know how to say the state. A bunch of people just tuned out. But hopefully you come back. Oregon Renaissance Fair, which is happening this weekend and next at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. Yep. You guys came from on site, and you look just not tired at all, not stressed, just life
Those
is
are
a dream.
Total lies.
My hair usually looks this frizzy and curly.
Yes,
and
this
poofy.
Look of a raccoon is totally normal. Yes, absolutely. No, it's been fun. It's fun.
How is it going over there? I just wanted to get an update to start things off. So.
Sure. So, you know, what's fun about it is we are building this town from the ground up. So we are watching it kind of step by step, fill itself out and become this town that, you know, everybody's going to come and see. So it's really
a
going well.
A lot of like Renaissance fairs take place at kind of castles or places. This thing, it's just a field that you.
So we literally, yes, we literally are building
the thing that you don't
things.
Bring is the trees.
Like. Absolutely, and love
if we
the
could,
trees.
We would.
Yeah, we love them trees. That it makes it so nice on those hot days. But it's just been so surreal to just be back here after 3 years.
Is it some kind of reunion things happening? Are people just feeling good to be back in the saddle, as it were?
Yeah, there's something about, Rennie's. We're kind of a family in that way. You know, we haven't seen some of us haven't seen each other for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's just like no time. We're just so, everybody's hugging. And it's just like we're so excited to put on, the best show in Oregon. That's what we're hoping for. Oregon?
Is Oregon.
That what you said?
That's
Oregon.
What I accidentally said. Got ahead of myself. Just no challenges, I'm sure. Nothing unexpected happening.
There's always little challenges when you're doing an event, right? But we have such an amazing team that we are able to support each other and fix things quickly. So nothing that has not been able to be handled well.
Yeah.
So.
Can you move your mic a little bit more?
This way?
Yeah. There we
okay.
go. What is the team like? How many volunteers do you bring together to put this on?
Well, we have a lot of probably close to 300 to maybe 500. It depends because they are, and then plus there's cast and crew, right? The cast is all the entertainment, the villagers that fill it in, and then merchants and all that stuff come in. So we have probably a total of, at this one, maybe 800
there's
people.
A lot.
That's crazy.
To put it
That's
on.
That's so much more than I thought you were going to say.
That's insane.
Yes.
How do you manage that?
We have great leadership in the departments, and here's the thing, not everybody's there the whole time. They'll say, I can volunteer 5 hours on this day, and I can work 2 hours on this day.
You got me for 10 minutes.
Exactly, yes. How much can you give me?
You got me while Shauna uploads that photo.
Yep, that's as long as it's going to take.
Out. I got to go get my Jamba Juice.
Exactly. And so it's just, so we have this great, good pool of people that come in and... it's incredible. People don't realize when we do Washington, it's over 1,000. You know, 1,200 people are there, coming in and out. So,
I know you're really involved with this as well, Shauna. So you can maybe add stuff, but I want to ask Jamie because I know you're involved in some of the marketing and stuff. What does that look like? Having the weird COVID years where it's kind of we're going to try to delay it at first, and then no, we have to cancel, and then maybe we'll try to do it at smaller. No, we're going to cancel again. But now you're trying to bring for sure it's happening. Is it almost like a debate with people? No, I promise it really is happening.
Yeah, a little bit. Like there's a lot of people who are just super excited, and there's a lot of people for a little while who are like, is it gonna?
Right.
At this point, they know.
Like
at this point, no.
My heart can't take it.
The castle is up, my friend. We are a go. I think the thing that has been the most different about marketing over this past few years is like just not being able to go do marketing events in person and trying to do it all online.
Yeah,
like I miss the parades a lot.
Yeah. Conventions,
so, the conventions, and
sure,
but it's wonderful to be back at it now.
Is the strategy, though, largely similar in terms of how you're marketing, how you're promoting, or are you doing things differently or to a greater degree with this sort of comeback year?
That's more of a Shauna question.
Okay.
I follow Shauna around.
Yes.
She tells me where to point a camera.
Exactly. So what's different is definitely the digital thing. A lot of things went to this more of a visual thing, right? All these Zoom meetings and different things that were happening. And so we did a lot, and we were very successful without being able to come do anything in person.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of like TV stuff and just small YouTube videos, you know, and people really respond well to those visuals. So that's really how it has kept us afloat and alive.
It's kind of an interesting, it's been interesting to me to sort of watch the cinema industry and the movie industry. I love movies, but there's this like struggle now where they're trying to get people to come back to the theaters, right? Because it's like, you know, when all they had was home, they really streamlined that and made it super convenient, and they were releasing, you know, big picture, big budget movies right to your living room, and people kind of, this is pretty sweet, actually. I like this.
I don't have to leave my house. Yeah. I can eat whatever I want. Yeah, absolutely.
You guys don't necessarily have that much struggle, because there's no way to fully recreate the experience of Renaissance Fair virtually.
Yes, as you know, as a fan of going, is the being immersed in a time, you know, and even those fantasy elements. We've all, and honestly, cinema and TV's been great with all the fantasy that's come out.
Yeah.
People want Ren Fair more than ever because they see it and they're like, that seems fun to dress up.
I want
to
feel that.
I
want to
feel
person.
That and like be immersed. So that's something that a live event offers that's different. Now, we did something called Fair From Afar.
Okay.
One of the years that, you know, we were off for COVID. So we had a bunch of different performers, you know, do Zoom like live performances for the audience.
Wow.
And that did go over well, but they're like, this is nothing like in person, but we appreciate for you guys doing it.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's been a roller coaster.
Those performers and whatnot, have you found that a lot of them are still kind of around, so kind of ready to go, or did they get a job at Starbucks? I'm sorry, I just can't wait around.
I'm sure some did, but you know, true artists, right? We call them starving artists, right? They're like, you know, this is what I do. This is my life. You know, this is, I travel and perform, and it was very hard for them. There was a lot of difficult times, so they are so happy to be back. Them more than anybody, I think. It's the performers and the patrons coming in that are so happy to just be at Ren Fair.
I think I've heard three people say, can I quit my job at Starbucks yet?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I was just using that generically, but it is actually
but
Starbucks.
Can I quit my job? Can I quit my job and we're back?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's so fun. Well, we've touched on this a couple of times. One of the big things I wanted to ask you guys about is just kind of the appeal and the need for escapism, right? With just everything that's going on.
Sure.
You know, it has been going on for the past couple of years. How big a driver is that in people wanting to come out to Ren Fair or participate in Ren Fair?
You know, we pay a lot of attention to what the people are saying, you know, on our page.
Yeah.
They email us their concerns, and they, you know, because it's been quite a few years now, almost, what, 3 years?
Yeah.
They are hungry now to do something. So it's like almost a thing of the past to say, oh my God, when are you going to come back so I have something fun to do? So that kind of information. And they know and trust us. We're going
to
give you a good event. So
yeah.
they're like, yes, we've been waiting for 3 years for this. So hearing that makes us feel really good because we know
absolutely.
We're doing it right here.
And do you feel like a lot of people really are like, I am fully just going to step into a new world. I'm going to forget about gas prices for a while. I'm going to forget about my, you know, crappy job.
I actually, this is a hilarious meme of a guy, oh, don't worry, you know, you don't need to dress up for Ren Fair. You are, you know, you're not going to spend that much money, and then the guy's leaving a full plate of armor and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Don't bring $100 cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to spend it, but, you know, you don't have to dress up, but you'll want to.
Once you get there, an hour into it,
that's when you're going to start to want it. And then they always leave with some item on them. And we love to see that because that, like you said, now they're really embracing it and stepping into it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it makes it so much more fun.
Truth.
Like, you can enjoy fair without a costume, but once you're in a costume, it's a whole nother experience.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything, and I know there are some, so new things this year.
Yes, the one thing that I really want the people around here to know about is for the first time ever, we're doing nightlife on Saturday.
Yeah.
So we're doing a Saturday show, which does require an evening ticket. I'm not sure, I think it's $15, but it goes from 7 p.m. when it closes to midnight.
Okay.
We're gonna have, the band is called Brother, and they're, I think they're local to the Pacific Northwest, but they have a fairly, you know, local famous kind of following.
Okay.
And then a Ignition Fire Troupe, which does an amazing fire show, will be there doing stuff intermission. So fire and music and ale and mead from 7 p.m. to midnight for the first time ever.
Yeah.
We want people to stay and hang out with us. And, you know, a lot of the actors and performers and people are going to be there mingling too.
Yeah.
So it'll be a lot of fun.
What's the flavor of that? Obviously, the fire and whatnot has some elements of, but the music, is it, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's not 15th century music.
No.
But is there a flavor of sort of like some kind of...
Yeah, it's like the mix of folky with, you know, that Pacific Northwest kind of...
15th century music would just be a bunch of like religious
lutes,
hymns.
Yeah, it would be like some lutes and mandolins and some people
like
going,
like really body drinking songs.
Amen. You know, the Renaissance, it was like, this weather is perfect Renaissance weather, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
It's the music, like I said, it's folk mixed with like the Northwest rock, you know, and there's some like Celtic elements, I think, in some of the music as well from some of the stuff I heard. So
it's a blending.
Yeah. And, you know, the artists from the Pacific Northwest do that really well. You know, they have all these roots, Celtic, Viking and all that stuff. And they put it into their music well. Mm. And the Ignition Fire Troop usually comes out. They kind of look like barbarians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have, you know, they do a fire whip. They got fire fans. They blow fire. It is an incredible show when it gets dark. It's one of the favorites that people love. They're like, we want the fire troop to come back.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you can get tickets for that ahead of time, or do you get them there?
You can buy it. So you can, and for this, anyone listening to the podcast, you can get 25% off your general admission.
Okay.
So it's ORF25.
Okay.
And they'll get, immediately 25% off. The nighttime ticket is also available there on Eventbrite, or buy them at the gates when you come in.
Okay.
You can buy them at the gates.
Cool. I also did see on the website some new entertainment this year. There's a Falconer.
Yes, and that is something that is Renaissance-y,
yeah.
You know, right? But
I'm
he also
about
has
that.
What else does he have? Owl, he has a certain falcon, he has a couple of birds that he has well trained. So he'll show them them off and the different things that they can do. There's a strong woman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I saw that. I'm really excited about her.
She is
an aerialist.
Aerialist is brand new, wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, the Joust is back, better than ever.
Yeah.
We got a couple new horses.
A new Spanish knight.
Yep. We expanded, like lengthened the field, so it's longer now.
Yeah.
What else do we have
here?
Is it
the same part of the fairgrounds where it's going to be
The Joust is in the same spot.
You want the whole village?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly, the layout's very similar.
It's very similar.
Yeah. So for folks listening, sort of the Yellow Gate area of the fairgrounds.
That's where they're going to come in.
Yeah, where those big, big trees are.
Correct.
And then there's houses right...
Right by
right,
it, yeah.
Like, visible.
They love it. Cool.
Yep.
I love your birds flying around.
Yeah.
No, and lots of new merchants and fan favorites will be back as well.
Yeah.
Couple of new guilds with new
village
people.
Lawns Connect, which is a new one.
Wasn't there another?
Swedish Court is
Swedish
here
court.
With ponies.
This
is going to be great for your kids. Okay.
Yeah.
If you have little, stop by Swedish Court, which is near the Joust.
Okay.
They have ponies and...
It's like a petting zoo with unicorns.
It's like a petting zoo.
And
they
the princess.
Call them little baby, little tiny unicorns, or little pony unicorns.
Oh, that's adorable.
You can
adorable.
Feed them and pet them.
Please tell me there's
they
like...
They do like a tea party with the princess.
There's a cidery like really close by
of
there
of course,
well.
It's right next to the bar.
It's right
next to the bar.
Just in the bar.
Then, we'll definitely spend some time there.
Right there. Yes. The Fairy Glen, which the kids love again. You know, lots of the fairies. So there's stuff for every age group.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a story about the Fairy Glen, but we were going to food and drink and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
There's like, that's kind of a mix. We got some local places as well, some kind of more period type places as well, kind of Renaissance fair.
Meat pies.
Yeah.
Turkey legs.
Yes.
Those are the staple,
the
I think, Ren Fair stuff. But then, what else? We've got Euros. We've got, what are those? Crepes.
You got crepes and
corn
on a stick.
One guy, he has his he makes his own cheese sauce. It's macaroni and cheese. It's pulled pork on nachos.
Mm.
Really good because he spends the whole night before making this specialty melted cheese.
Is that local?
He's from Northern California,
okay.
So it's pretty local, but they do the fair circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, there's so much good food.
Yeah. I don't think we mentioned, but for folks who haven't visited before, the underlying storyline is that this is a Scottish village that's hosting a royal visit from the real-life historical Mary Queen of Scots.
Mary Queen of
and
Scots.
So that's why you've got the Joust, and they're sort of vying for the favor of the queen, mm-hmm. And all the kind of party elements and the food and feasting is all about that, that this village has the honor of welcoming royalty.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a section where the Scottish court is at, and yeah. so you can, you know, at different times meet the queen and her court and yeah. take pictures, and she knights them, right? And mm-hmm. there's the yeah. princesses and dames or knights.
Dames and knights.
Yeah, dames and knights, and gives little favors and stuff
like
that.
There's like a little scavenger hunt type
quest. There's a scavenger hunt. There's actually two. Okay. So there's the dragon hunt, which you can get the clues on the website already under dragon hunt. It's okay. Quinn and Bloom, which is one of the merchants, also has a fun little treasure hunt. Mm. So you have to stop at their booth to get information of where to go. You know, so it's another fun activity for the kids.
Yeah, awesome. So my story about the fairy glen, when I was out there 3 years ago with my kids, mm-hmm. my oldest would have been about 5 or 6, girl. Mm-hmm. Just like, she's born for the stage, just loves everything, loves to try every food, loves to do everything. So she was just in love with everything. Mm-hmm. My son would have been about 3, complete, total opposite. Just everything, you know, he doesn't want to be on stage, didn't want to be knighted by the queen, didn't want to do anything. But afterward, it's like, oh yeah, I loved it. You know, mm-hmm. so he's like enjoying it, you just can't tell. Mm-hmm. we went to the fairy glen, which of course was going to be like 100% my daughter's scene, and I figured like he wasn't going to have any of it. And sure, you know, the fairy queen or whatever, mm-hmm. she came over and she's like, you know, trying to talk to him. Hey, do you want to do a picture? Do this different stuff? And he's like, you know. So my daughter, she's doing a coloring thing or some kind of activity. So, and he's just sitting in the wagon like he's been asking to go home for the last hour or two.
Right.
I turn around, he's gone. I'm like, what happened to Gideon? He's yep. over on the queen's like lap or like sitting next to, just like, yeah.
I
yeah.
live here now?
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is my, you
these
know.
Are my people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm one of them now.
Yeah,
so.
You're like, oh, this is what you wanted. Okay.
That just, that was all to say the performers are so great. You know, they meet the kids where they're at. They mm-hmm. really, you know, if the kid's not having it, that's totally fine, you know. But they just really seem to love what they do, and that comes through.
Yes, we are prideful of our cast and crew and volunteers. Seriously, we have the best team on the planet,
yeah.
in my opinion. You know what I mean? As far as doing event planning with people, these are the ones to do it with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to talk to you guys for another hour or two, but I know you've got some work to do. Is
we
there
do.
Anything
we do.
Last things you want to share? Or obviously, definitely tell us where we can get tickets and get information.
Absolutely. So first thing is, don't forget, it's going to be rainy this weekend. And it's not so bad because there's a ton of tree coverage.
Yeah.
But come prepared for that. You know what I mean? If it's going to be kind of rainy, you might want to wear a poncho, but it's the time to wear that full plate of armor, I tell you, because you're not going to be burning and baking in it, right? and then also, we want people to know about the mead. We have mead that is specially made for us from Upgard Meadery, and we have a bunch of flavors, and you can sample them at the ale house.
Nice.
All right? And then you can get the tickets.
Have, like, handmade sodas and stuff, too, I remember, right? Or
we did, but I'm not sure if they have it or not. It's all about distribution,
gotcha.
You know, and a lot of places kind of went down with COVID.
Yeah.
So, but we do have all our ales are local.
Yeah.
You know, we only work with local breweries and things like that. And
nice.
then tickets you can get at OregonFair.com, and that's fair with an E at the end of it.com.
Yeah, yeah. Jamie, last words?
Just come and have a good time.
Yeah.
Please,
that's what it's
join
about.
Us.
Yeah.
We've been stressing for weeks and weeks and weeks to put this on, so please come and join.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
have, and we are so happy to be here. Thank you, Canby, for continuing to support us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you guys. Thanks for all
Thanks
that you
for having us.
Hey, Tyler. Read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something, sass, sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, Hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expensive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read.
Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I'm AJ. I'm your local Oddmos franchise owner.
I'm Mike, co-founder of Oddmos.
And we're the hosts of The Odd Pod, a podcast about
life in the pizza industry. We're going to have on some franchisees. We're going to have some different vendors on. We're going to get a snapshot of what goes on behind the scenes in the pizza world.
Don't forget to tell them about the sports.
There's sports.
And the crazy wacky pizza that we have every Wednesday that we create. And we also have a special guest every week as well.
And I'm Gage, Odd Pod's senior sports analyst.
Gage, who gave you that title?
Me.
Oh boy. Find us on Spotify and Apple Music and the Podbean.
When Canby goes to Volcano Stadium in Kaiser Tuesday to battle the West Linn Lions with the OSAA 6A baseball title on the line, it will be almost exactly 62 years to the day since the Cougars made their first and previously only trip to the state finals. A June 4th, 1960, tilt with the Seagulls of Seaside High School. It was a generation ago, but many descendants and even original members of that generation are still here. The roster featured the talents of Mike Fisher, Arlie Lenhart, Steve Buchanan, Al Kraft, Jim Martin, Wayne Oliver, Jack Fisher, Chuck Jackson, Prentice Hansen, Jed Harms, Ed Corwin, Gerald Kraxberger, Richard Meek, Danny Owings, and Frank Cutsforth. The team was coached by Chuck Driggers and managed by Hugh Preston and Larry Ball. Many of the names will be familiar to longtime Canby residents. Wayne Oliver, who passed away in February of 2014 at the age of 70, became a businessman and a legend in local youth sports, founding Canby Kids and coaching and sponsoring countless teams over four decades. Canby's baseball field is named in his honor, and the team's uniforms sport a patch bearing his likeness, which also serves as the logo of the Wayne Oliver Foundation, which supports a number of local community and youth-oriented causes. Al Kraft's son, Ty, was a three-sport athlete for the Cougars and earned 1989 All-State as a tight end, linebacker, and place kicker. He has served as coach of the Canby Cougar softball team since 2020. And Frank Cutsforth, well, everybody knows Frank. Baseball was our whole life back when we were growing up, Cutsforth recalled in a recent interview. You never lose those kinds of things. It gets in your DNA. The Cougs were in the Capital Conference back then, a league centered around Salem and divided into northern and southern sections. Canby's northern division included Woodburn, Gervais, North Marion, and the kings of the conference, Mount Angel. Mount Angel, which was led by future Canby superintendent and coach Dick Brown, had beaten Canby in a doubleheader earlier in the season and were regarded as one of the hot teams of the Capital Conference, according to a 1960 article in the Canby Herald. Canby captured second place in the conference with wins over Gervais and North Marion, then left town for the final two games of the season, non-league contests on the coast in Warrenton. In those days, only the league winners were admitted to the postseason, regardless of record or strength of schedule. We played the season out and finished one game behind Mount Angel, so we thought we were done, Cutsforth said. We left for this doubleheader on the coast, won both games, then came home and found out Mount Angel had lost their last two, so we had leapfrogged into first place. That set up a conference championship game with the Southern Division winners, the Sarah Catholic Sabres of Salem. They were kind of a juggernaut in sports at that era. He said, we were not favored to win that game, honestly. The next year, Sarah Catholic won state easily. We lost in a really tough two-game series to them, and then they walked through the state playoffs. So we thought we were the second best team in the league in 61 as well, but they didn't let you in the playoffs back then unless you won your league. But in 1960, the home team Cougars had the upper hand, winning a tight 1-0 pitcher's duel in which Ed Corwin allowed only 4 scattered hits. The lone run came from Richard Meek, who drew a walk and scored on successive singles from Kraft and Cutsforth, who followed each other in the batting order. The school district had no buses in those days, so the players had to arrange private transport. Cutsforth's parents, Glenn and Elsie, agreed to loan their station wagon to Driggers for the occasion, who loaded it with ballplayers and headed for Walla Walla. Mike Doc Harms, a former Canby baseball and football star, made the drive from Oregon State University, where he was studying veterinary medicine, to watch his younger brother Jed play. While no one in Canby had heard of Milton Freewater, the feelings were mutual in eastern Oregon. Nobody there knew about us either, Cutsford said. Their pitcher was this left-handed kid who really threw the ball hard. The rumor was he was a Yankees prospect. That's not as far-fetched as it might sound. A generation earlier, the town of Muddy Frogwater, as it is sometimes jokingly known, had produced Oscar Harstad, a major league pitcher who appeared in 32 games for the Cleveland Indians in 1915. The game was closely contested until the sixth inning, when the Canby Nine blew things wide open with an 8-score run that started with Cutsforth. I remember I lined a shot up the middle that missed the pitcher's head by inches, and that started us going, he said. We won that game 10-1. The Cougs paraded through their entire lineup that inning, with Cutsforth coming up to bat again, he drew a walk, before Jed Harms finally struck out to end the fun. In the semis, the boys had to head down to another foreign locale, the tiny southern Oregon town of Drain, which was centered around two things, the timber industry and baseball. The Drain Black Sox, a semi-pro team sponsored by the local Woolley Lumber Company, had won the National Baseball Congress Tournament, the World Series of Amateur Baseball, just 2 years prior. They were the first West Coast and only Oregon team to ever win the title. The town had that environment of baseball, Cusford said. The Drain Black Sox, they had a lot of college kids who worked at the lumber mill in the summer and loved to play baseball. Really high caliber, and they didn't know who we were either. We beat them 2-0. The Cougs won 3 games in 6 days to punch their ticket to the state championship, their first and, until this season, only chance at the title at Multnomah Stadium in Portland. Originally built in 1926, the storied Multnomah Park has seen nearly every conceivable outdoor athletic and cultural event, from dog racing to a summer ski jump in 1953, intended to promote the upcoming Winter Games at Mount Hood. Sadly, it was there that the Canby Nine Cinderella story ended in heartbreak, as the Cougs fell 4-0 to the Seagulls of Seaside High School on Saturday, June 4, 1960. Only Mike Fisher managed 2 hits against the Gulls as the typically dependable Canby offense sputtered to a halt. If it wasn't for Seagulls, these boys would be state 8-2 baseball champions, the Herald's headline from its next edition read. Indeed. That was our run, Cusford said. You never forget that stuff. It was kind of unexpected, but you just play and stuff happens sometimes. We had some good ability. We had some really good players. We were a bunch of competitive guys. After high school, many of the guys from that 1960 team settled in the Canby area, started families, businesses, and civic clubs, and many of them or their descendants remain here today. And, of course, they kept that competitive spirit alive, dominating in local fast-pitch softball leagues and becoming lifelong fans of Canby baseball. The 2022 Cougars' magical run has brought back a lot of memories for the team's surviving members. I'm reliving this stuff now, Tyler, to be honest with you, Cusford said. I'm texting Coach Stolzig just about every day. I started wishing him well after that first game, encouraging him to have fun, because he and those kids will never forget this as long as they live. He did something else that first night when Canby hosted its first home playoff game in 17 years, beating Ben 2-1 to jumpstart its title run. He picked up a lucky rock. You know, I coached a lot of Little League, and I'm very superstitious, he admitted. Baseball people can be awfully superstitious. Everybody's got their little things. So I used to pick up rocks around the field, and if they kept it going, I'd hang on to it. I had this rock I picked up at the backside of the field, and I told JJ, I've got this rock that's going to help you. I think there might be about 4 more wins in this rock. Cuts Firth is looking forward to watching history repeat itself for his Canby Cougars this Tuesday, although hopefully with a happier ending this time. Being one of the few other Canbyites to have ever played on the sport's highest high school stage, Cuts Firth believes these boys are ready. I think they've seasoned themselves, he said. You look at their competition. They played in the toughest league in the state, and that prepared them. They played West Lynn 3 times, all close games. My hope is just that they play well and have fun, and let things fall where they may. With no seagulls likely to be within miles of Volcano Stadium, the Cougars will certainly have a good shot. Just so long as Frank holds onto that rock.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then.
Wait, what?
And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.